I wrote this song I call Can't Get Enough of the News. I used to sing most anything, but now it gives me the blues. Like working all day, it gets in the way of keeping up with the news. I get in my car, tune in NPR to talk radio. I used to like the tunes, but it's been many moons. Now I wanna be in the mood.
Hello and welcome to EnlightenRadio.org. The program you're about to listen to is a podcast of a live program on November 1st, 2018. It's the Name in Progress program featuring John Case, myself, Mike Diesel, a legendary stand-up comic, J.B. Christensen, a solar power advocate and labor advocate throughout the state of West Virginia, Larry Bish, a veteran counselor to the Eastern County Regional Jail, and a musician, raconteur, and all-around hipster, as well as Linnea Atkinson, the current president of the Jefferson County chapter of the American Federation of Labor. And, of course, we have I missed anybody? I don't think so. Anyway, and that's what's on the agenda for today. We're going to be kicking around a lot of stuff from Sean O'Leary, former West Virginia resident, guest now from Seattle, one of the pithiest commentators on West Virginia politics who ever lived here, as well as we're going to hear from Linnea Atkinson from the 55 Strong Movement among the teachers here in Jefferson County and around the state. And also, we're going to be talking to Larry Bish, and he's going to be recounting the long shadow of the Vietnam War on today's agenda, and much more. So here it is. Welcome aboard.
Are exploding in comparison to 2014 across the country. Mm-hmm. The numbers have gone up 585% in 3 days.
Wow.
Across the country.
That's huge.
That's this is going to be one of the largest midterms.
All right.
You've ever seen.
We've got 2 minutes before Sean calls in.
It's time for. I want a quick round here. Okay.
Okay.
What is the most important thought you've had? Oh, we'll take this later.
We're going to pick that up later on. Here's our call. All
right. Hello. Who's on the air there?
Hi, this is Sean O'Leary.
Hi, Sean. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can just fine.
Okay. I'm John Case. Okay. And you know me. And you know Mike Diesel is here as well.
Hi, Sean.
J.B. Christensen.
Oh, hi, Mike. Hey, man.
And we also have the president of the AFT local here in Jefferson County. And maybe the local goes beyond that. I'm not sure. But
No, we're just Jefferson County.
Okay. Linnea Atkinson. And so we're stewing about the past week. And what are you doing out in the... You're out there in the place where that's going to separate from the Union and become the new America or something like that, right?
We're going to become Cascadia.
Yeah. Cascadia, of course, yes.
All right.
Because freedom.
I know. Well, I see you have enough lawyers. You can line them up on the border, and they'll probably serve as an army.
But, actually, folks out there have a lot of pride in being what we call the thin green line, because we're out here blocking coal exports from the Powder River Basin going to Asia.
Good. So,
it's one of the many causes.
I see you've been noted for your play that is on Broadway. Is that in New York now, on Broadway?
No, not yet.
It's going there?
Eventually.
My play Pound, just completed a one-month run. It was off-Broadway.
Right.
Which is kind of the minor leagues to Broadway, but yeah. 1 month run, but it was a lot of fun because Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future fame did the lead.
16 gigawatts!
Wow.
He nailed it.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, okie doke.
That's great. So now, okay, what happens though?
Great actor. I'm sorry. I was diminishing him.
Did they mangle your script originally, or did you have to negotiate, or what relation did you have as the author?
Well, the answer is that yes, they mangled the script, at least somewhat, but because I'm a complete artistic whore, I raised no objections.
Perfect.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Now, why would you write a play about an insane poet?
Oh, well, the funny thing is that I wrote it about 10 years ago, and of course I was, living in Harper's Ferry at the time.
Right.
And so while it vastly predated Donald Trump, at least as a politician, a lot of the issues and themes that we're grappling with right now were present then. And so it's all about words mattering.
Right.
I know words. Yeah. I have the best words.
Right. Right. Well, how do you give me your take on? I haven't talked to you in a while, and so I'm really interested in your take on the past week and its meaning for what's happening. I mean, how much of it's hot air, and how much of this is stormtrooper stuff?
Well, I don't know, but just to show that there are crazies everywhere, I don't know if you guys watched the Rachel Maddow show last night, but I just saw on Twitter that a state representative from Washington has a 4-page manifesto floating around out there that calls for basically the extermination of all non-Christian males. So,
just the males?
If that's any indication.
Oh man, that's
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
I don't even think Darth Vader would go that
far. No, even Darth would be like, "Oh, this is too far for me."
That's right,
Yeah, that's ridiculous, man.
Darth Vader,
That's an actual representative in a state that actually submitted a. God
almighty. Now, that was a speech he made or a bill.
It was a document that he wrote and apparently shared with a few people, and you can see it online. It exists, and it actually, yes, does call for the execution.
And he's an elected representative?
Yeah, he is.
That's unbelievable.
Shouldn't he lose his job just for that? Should he lose? That's a big ethics question.
Under what
should he be removed from office because of that behavior? I think he should.
I don't know. Linnea, what would you teach the kids about this?
Oh, well, see, I teach the little babies, so we don't get into politics. But
good for you.
I think that we would teach them to be nice to each other and, everybody is our friend, regardless right. of race or creed or religion.
Or who you love.
Right.
Sean, what's your prediction of what's going to happen on Tuesday in the midterms? Though this is a test, by the way, we'll review your answer on Wednesday, and see what how close you were.
No, I'm going to go with the Democrats picking up 45 seats in the House. I think one of those seats will be Ojeda in
West Virginia. Yay!
Oh!
Yay. Love it.
And I wish one of those seats were going to be McKinley in the first, but
right.
that doesn't seem likely.
Mm-mm.
And then, of course, you poor souls in the second.
Yeah, sad.
I just wish, but.
Yeah, I know.
It's a big district.
Yeah.
It's a big district, and it's difficult you can hope maybe there might be a little bit less turnout, as the opioid crisis deepens. But
And it pains me to say this also, but I think Manchin will hold on to his seat. Because, as you guys know from the past, I've got real problems with Joe Manchin.
Mm-hmm.
That said, Patrick Morrissey is...
That's what I was going to point out. I have some real problems with Joe, but I voted for him.
Right.
I'll be voting for him tomorrow.
I had to. I didn't see it as a choice, which kind of sucks.
I know. You feel like you're held hostage in a hotel.
You want to hear the jingle? Yeah. You don't want to hear the jingle that's going around?
What is it?
Hold your nose.
What?
Hold your nose, vote for Joe, and then we go after Capito.
I guess, yeah.
Wishful thinking, right?
Yeah, we got to figure out some something for the state that's going to work. And that, here's my thing, right? For example, the PEIA struggle here in the state of West Virginia.
Oh, you've struck a nerve, John.
To fund the state employees and all public teachers, retirement benefits and health benefits.
Right.
And my question is that it sounds like the only place to really get some serious money is from raising the severance tax. And then the big question is that, okay, well, if you, how do you overwhelm whatever the political coalition the coal industry has in the state, you know, to, because they'll obviously don't want to pay that money, any extra money, but how do we get around that? That seems to be the giant roadblock that just stinks up everything. The coal industry vetoes something and, well, you just can't do it. You know, any ideas on that, guys?
I think it's a much bigger issue. It goes way beyond just a severance tax or PEIA. It's gosh, we can go as far as like campaign finance with this. You know, the Republican politicians are paid, their campaigns are paid for and bought by gas and coal. And we have people that are pledging to not take this kind of money, and they're not getting the money or the support that they need to win this campaign. The PEI task force has had, I think, one meeting in 2.5 months. As soon as Jim Justice said that he was working on an alternative plan independently, all of a sudden the task force has stopped meeting. And he comes out with this $100 million that he just found. And
I found this in the closet,
right?
Mansion, but I thought I'd go ahead and give this out because I done did it, you know.
But it's rather interesting that the $100 million that he found didn't make its way onto the letter that he's required to send to Ted Cheatham, who is the director of the PEI Finance Board,
right?
With his amounts that he's giving PEIA next year. So PEIA is, the funding is remaining unchanged for next year. So it looks like the teachers and the public employees have yet another battle to fight. So,
right.
We'll see.
Well, I think that's an interesting dilemma. And I'm just wondering how the Democrats can, or and independents, and how and where, why is the coal miners union consistently supporting these some of these guys? And I have a solution to the coal miners problem, and that is pay them.
Pay the coal miners?
Pay them.
Yeah, pay them.
Pay them a lot of money.
Make them even.
Make them healthy.
Make them even. Pay them, and let's move on.
I figure they've been ripped off productivity-wise about $1 million. Carol worked this up in a spreadsheet, actually, a little while ago.
You showed it to me.
And they've been ripped off since about 1990 by about $1 million a worker. And so, you know, we could just get them, just pay them, and then get them politically on your side, and that'll be the end of the coal company's domination. But, you know, so I don't know. What's your plan, Doug? It's Sean. You're the economist.
He's an energy guy.
You play an economist, you know. And
he's actually a big rep for the energy industry out there.
Well, that's okay. You know, we want that perspective too.
No, I work for the Northwest Energy Coalition, and we're a clean energy advocacy.
There you go.
Out here. And we're behind the initiative 1631 in Washington that would, if it passes on election day, establish the first tax on carbon emissions. So, you know, we'll see if we make it. It's kind of nip and tuck right now, according to the polls, but we may actually have it. And so far, the oil industry has spent about $30 million in Washington trying to fight this thing. They're so desperate over it. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, in answer to your question, I was just thrilled when I saw that the UMWA endorsed OJETA for the third.
Oh, that's right, they did. I take it back, probably. Yeah,
because it's the first time in, as you said, about 20 years that the UMWA has finally recognized that its interests and its members' interests and its community's interests are not aligned with the interests of the coal industry. I mean, you know, there's that, you know, the usual suspect Kaiser Soze thing, that the greatest trick that the devil ever performed. Well, the greatest trick the devil ever performed was persuading miners and the UMWA that its interests were aligned with those of the industry.
Right.
They were not, have not been.
Never.
And I don't know, frankly, because I'm kind of far removed from the situation right now, I don't know what precisely inspired them to finally back a Democrat in Ojeda.
I do.
But I'm hoping...
It was the teachers.
No, it was the teachers, but it was also the fact there was an open seat. In other words, there was no incumbent. And the mine workers endorsed McKinley in the first district because he had a voting record that favored labor, you know, just a little bit over 50%. I think it was 57%, something like that, where he voted. So he had a record, and his challenger did not have a record, even though everybody knows she would be better, you know, to represent labor. They went for the incumbent because he's the odds-on favorite.
You see, this could not happen in West Virginia right now, but one of the miracles that I experienced when I came out to Washington State was that here, state government and state elected representatives, and this isn't exclusively Democrats, it's also a significant number of Republicans out here, view their constituents, the voters, as their primary constituency, not industry.
Right.
And so when, you know, we've got a few coal-fired power plants that are being shut down around the state out here, and when it came time to shut those plants down, one of the things that state government did, which again probably could not happen in West Virginia, was that it held the operators of those coal-fired power plants to account to provide transition funding for communities. Retraining of workers, investment in other industries, and in some cases, actually the creation of, you know, solar generation where coal-fired generation had been previously.
That's great.
It's a remarkable thing that takes place when you have elected representatives that see their primary constituency as voters rather than the industry.
Why? We're not there in West Virginia. Why do you think, give the top three reasons why that is.
I think the first one, of course, is that coal in particular did not have the defining role. It wasn't the exclusive job provider for the better part of half a century,
right,
as it was in West Virginia. But again, I think there is a large dose of, frankly, good government attitudes out here that made the state, you know, not consistently a Democratic state. It's always been, especially at the state government level, a fairly closely divided state between Democrats and Republicans. And so consequently, you know, politicians have had to appeal to the popular vote. They couldn't do what we see being done so often now in national politics, which is appeal only to your base and ignore and say to hell with the rest of everybody else.
Right.
You know, and I mean, that's not a situation that you can just go out and with the benefit of a few TV ads change immediately. But it is, I think, fundamentally the major difference that goes on out here, and that is that politicians feel as though they have to appeal first and foremost to their constituents, and there's not a dominant industry out here that has been able to delude the voters that somehow their interests are absolutely aligned with those of the industry itself. Because I just completed, there's a column out today, as a matter of fact, in Forbes magazine by Ken Silverstein, who is based in Charleston. If you haven't seen it, you really should go take a look at it.
Okay.
Because it's about West Virginia. And what he's calling out is that the coal industry is and the natural gas industries are basically doing nothing for the state economically.
Absolutely.
And what we did and what I helped him with, we went in and we looked at the most recent gross domestic product data, economic growth, because right now you've got a lot of politicians running around West Virginia saying, hey, we're doing just great. We're leading the nation in economic growth.
Which are all lies.
That's actually...
Yeah.
Actually, statistically, it's true. The problem in West Virginia is that virtually none of that extraction industry-based wealth actually finds its way into the state's economy because it immediately flows out the back door to out-of-state investors and interests. And you can actually see that in the GDP data, because while the extractive industries, coal and natural gas, expanded by, and I'm not kidding when I say this, they grew 23% in 2017, which is huge economic growth.
Yeah.
The rest of West Virginia's economy actually shrank.
That's right. And that's important to show that.
Yep.
But it sounds to me like it's going to require something like a benevolent dictator.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. Financed by Google or something to come in and, rework, overpower. And
this entire thing about playing to my base. I'm the president of everyone.
I'm just concerned about, when you have this kind of thing.
I'll ask you guys. You're closer to it than I am. Why can we not find more Ojeddas down there? I mean, he has, and I heard what you said about incumbency, but clearly the guy has appeal to a lot of voters who are about as deeply immersed in the coal fields and the haulers as any part of West Virginia. I mean, why can we not find more like him?
Maybe JB, why don't you weigh in?
I'd love to.
Yeah, go ahead.
My thought on that is, and that's a great question, Sean, and I appreciate it. And Sean O'Leary calling from Seattle, Washington today. We're really happy to have you. My thought on that is that Ojeda said publicly on his Facebook and everything else that he would vote for Trump, that he did vote for Trump, actually. I don't think he's going to vote for him this time if there is a chance, but the fact that he voted for Trump endeared him to a bunch of people in the coal fields that voted for Trump. So they, even though he's a Democrat, he's a crossover, and hopefully that'll bring votes for Manchin too.
Ick. I'm going to tell you a little story real quick about Ojeda. I don't know. Some of the stuff, I agree with him on. Some of the stuff, I don't. But I like him. And the reason why I like him is my wife and I were just kind of, hey, did you see this thing on Facebook about Ojeda? And I was like, yeah, I remember that guy. The poor guy that they beat the crap out of and put in the hospital and tried to kill. And he couldn't do it. And he came back, and now he's even stronger. And
that was a primary.
Yeah. And he posted a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife was like, I'm gonna try this number.
Right.
He answered the phone.
Yep.
He did.
I've done that too.
And my wife spoke to him for a little while. I spoke to him for a little while. He was pleasant. He was receptive. I kind of don't like the fact that he voted for Trump, but I understand it. But, I think he's gonna win, actually.
Yeah, so. We all do, and he's got a lot of support from the unions. I know my former union, MEBA, which is very strong in Seattle, with the Washington State Ferries and the.
He seems to call it like he sees it, pretty much, and he's pretty tough about it.
Right.
So JB, where are you at this week, though? I mean, you've been listening to the news all week.
Too much. I start to get headaches.
And I mean, okay, you got a headache.
I got a headache. Woke me up.
Is that as deep as you're going to go? I mean, I got a headache.
When I get a headache, it means high blood pressure, so it's not a good thing. You know, it's something that I have to watch.
I mean, you're talking about repressed rage, perhaps, or anger management issues?
Yep.
What are you trying to say, John?
Well, I don't have bad dreams normally, but last night I did have a bad dream. It woke me up. Ooh. And, I get tired at 10 o'clock. And that never happens. I'm up at least till midnight or 1 o'clock, watching the, Colbert and all the good ones.
I get tired at 9:15.
Yeah. All right. I want to get your guys' reaction, and Linnea's reaction, to the following news story.
Okay.
Megyn Kelly.
Who is she?
Former Fox News,
she's a daytime superstar person now.
And NBC paid her tons of money to come over and have a show.
Yeah, she came over and she embarrassed the leadership of Fox And then she came over and got a pretty much of a headline deal at NBC, but her program wasn't doing that great. And then she got in a lot of trouble a week or so ago over
dressing in blackface.
Talking about blackface, dressing up for Halloween costumes. But, and they fired her, okay?
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
They fired her.
She's gone.
But
bye-bye.
She's DJ Jerking gone.
She's going to get, she negotiated herself a
settlement.
$50 million.
Golden parachute?
Hold on. 15 or 50?
50.
50.
50.
What?
$50 million. Yeah.
Well, I think we're in the wrong business.
And get this. Now, usually when you're up there in those little realms, you know, you are tied down with ropes by non-disclosure.
Well,
okay. Hold on.
What?
But she now says that she's not going to sign anything that has a non-disclosure in it because they have defamed her, and so after she gets out of this, she's going to tell all. Okay,
she did that herself.
Whatever. Okay. Well, I'm just thinking. Okay. I mean, now I know hundreds, and I know there are millions of workers in the tech industry, for example. And frankly, name an industry where you have to have a college degree, matter of fact, you know, to do the job.
Stand-up comedy. Oh, never mind.
Yes. We're the...
Never mind. I didn't have to...
You know, the employees have to sign these non-disclosure agreements that says, oh, you can't go work for anybody else doing what we're doing. Oh, guess what? That code that you created... It belongs to us, not you.
That's like Conan O'Brien.
And if you go use it in another place.
You know, he got the Tonight Show, and then he didn't get the Tonight Show.
You'll go to jail forever. You know, all these. Now, I wish that if you would treat the rest of the country and workers like Megyn Kelly got. Because I think these intellectual property laws. Look, okay, I understand. You know, if your whole company's business prospects is based on, you know, illegal work you did for the CEO, he wants you to sign a non-disclosure agreement, okay? But look, if you're just a regular worker out there and you help contribute to the thing, you should be able to go over to the competitor. He offers you more money.
Right. Well, here's the thing. You're talking about Megyn Kelly and $50 million. Let's put this in perspective, too. I think the original contract she signed was $250 million. To come over, and
I'd say take it or leave it.
Produce and do her, you know, be on air and contribute to different stories. It was a pretty.
If I was NBC, I'd say take it or leave it.
It was one of the larger contracts in NBC's history of signing anyone.
I'd say take it in the next week or it goes down to 40.
Her lawyer is going to try to challenge the the non-disclosure agreement by saying, "Oh, there was slander involved. You can't let her not."
But she's the one that did it to herself.
Of course, you know. Well
but I mean, nobody takes responsibility for their actions anymore.
Right, that's true.
But I mean,
she should have resigned.
This is a labor issue because I believe that if you might not be able to organize them into unions, but I know I used to work at Microsoft, and I know there's every single person there. You know, was worried, everybody was worried about being ripped off for your so-called bonuses and your, options, things like that. Okay, it was always a big deal because you had no protection. I worked in one place where they paid out great. And I worked in another place where at the last minute, your values went from $10 a share in value down to 0.00001 cent. You know, per share.
Well, that was me. But anyway, let's.
So, you know, we need to get. Megyn Kelly can lead a labor movement now.
Oh, God, John. Why did you say
from intellectual property law?
Where do you come up with this?
Because she's a stand up comedian?
No. No. Megyn Kelly's just a ditz.
I agree. I
don't. Broadcaster and a ditz, but I don't get why he's. I think he's trying to be funny.
I want her
now.
I think she's taking a progressive stand.
Oh, God.
I do.
If you said that
for herself,
with the ear shot of her, she'd smack you in the face.
Right. We ought to free.
If you said Megyn Kelly, Megyn Kelly and progressive in the same sentence, she'd probably punch you.
To heck with non-disclosure agreements.
I hate non-disclosure agreements. That's why we have Rockwool.
Well, there. Yeah, okay. Well, there you go. Okay.
Did you hear about Rockwool, Sean?
I only bits of it. Yeah.
You would have been all over it.
I guess they're not covering themselves in glory. as far as transparency is concerned either.
Well, there's been a lot of lying going on, a lot of secret meetings, a lot of non-disclosure agreements, a lot of jimmied permits.
As I told John, I told John last week, I think it was, on this very program, I just want to make sure that, you know, the tourists get a chance to take a picture like the Hollywood sign. Get a picture near the smokestack. Just
yeah,
well, honey, just stand closer to the smokestack.
Well, they might decorate it during Christmas.
Pushing it.
Let's do a selfie.
They might put lights around it, you know, with a flashing light.
Oh, yeah.
Make it look pretty.
Yeah, yeah, make it like a tree.
Well,
like in Washington State, you see these big, huge trees, you know, evergreens, and they'll try to replicate that, I'm sure.
Well, we're gonna see. I mean, this is gonna be one of the impacts of the election on Tuesday, I believe.
Interesting.
If the rock wall protest it impacts a blue wave in Jefferson County, then you're going to see I don't know what's going to happen with the actual project, but it may be helping.
All I want for my birthday is a big blue wave, a big blue wave.
Yes,
November 5th, we all want that.
November 5th is my birthday. I want a present.
Hey, Sean.
I have my doubts about it.
How's everything going with the legalization out there?
Oh, just great. I mean, it's one of those things that, as you would expect, once it happens, nobody really notices.
Right, of course.
You know, you go to the store.
Right.
No.
Just another item in the grocery cart.
And, you know, at the same time, it's helped the state economically because it's generated a nice, tidy sum of revenue for the state as well. And, yeah, so life goes on. You do get used to walking around downtown Seattle, and you can kind of get a contact high pretty
nice.
Easily.
That's exactly like a friend of mine just moved to Colorado, and he said the exact same thing. I mean, he doesn't really need to get a contact high because he's takes care of himself. He was talking about how, you know, moving to Boulder is just the best thing he ever did because he, you know, and the state is just flush now. I mean, there's
so what kind of money? Yeah, what kind of money are we talking about, Sean? Annually,
what
tax what money
it is taking in?
Yeah,
you know, I don't really know. I mean, I know it's more than $100 million, but I don't know.
Okay,
that would pay for PEIA.
And you have you have a much larger population than West Virginia.
There's some good farmers here.
We had some great farmers.
We're about four times the size of West Virginia. About 7 million people compared.
Oh, I thought it was more than that. Okay, good.
I think
that's not bad.
I do think Colorado said their pull-in was, I thought it was closer to 200 million.
It could be.
It may just be. Just based they've been doing it
because they've been at it for a while. Yeah. So, and it's really getting like it's just very systematic.
Systematic. Are they regulating it through former liquor stores or a whole separate apparatus, or how are they doing it?
No, it's a regular retail business out here. In fact, you know, I come to work on the ferry, I go across Puget Sound, but between my home and the ferry, I go by two marijuana stores, you know.
Right.
It's cool.
Routine strip mall type of stuff.
Right.
Hang out there in front of the thing? Do they have a out of sight smoking, or is it less, you know, not like, I remember in Los Angeles, we had a little bit of a crowd would gather around the dispensaries. You know, but, I don't know. Back, that was 4 or 5 years ago. Anyway, listen.
You know, no, I mean, you can smoke openly here. There's nothing to stop you from doing it. And so, yeah, it's a commonplace. I mean, I guess maybe what's most noteworthy if you don't live in this environment is how unnoteworthy it is.
Right.
Nobody really knows.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
It makes sense.
Before we sign off, we're going to take a little break here for a minute, and I wanted to get you to before we sign off for this segment. I would say that feelings are running, you know, very rough as we approach the midterms on all sides, and I just wanted your thoughts on how do you paint an optimistic future here. Assume the best about the midterms from your standpoint and say, what happens next?
Oh, from my standpoint,
yes. I mean,
obviously the very best thing would be if the Democrats were able to gain majorities in both the House and the Senate, and I know the Senate is a real reach. The House looks like it's probably going to happen. But the other thing, and this will sound like a strange form of optimism, but if you've been through a 12-step program, you can probably understand. And that is that, you know, I don't know what the prospects for state government in West Virginia going forward, but I will say that I think both economically and politically, this right now where West Virginia is about as bad as it can get. It's
right.
pretty much completely bottomed out.
Right.
And so there really is almost no other way to go for West Virginia than up at this point, if we can get rid of just a few key people, starting with justice, but ultimately it's going to have to be the legislature.
Hey, hold on a minute.
I don't think the Democratic Party can turn the whole corner being led by Joe Manchin.
No.
Oh, God, no. Joe Manchin sowed the seeds for the destruction of the Democratic Party. You know, starting when he was for governor.
Yeah,
you're breaking up a little bit.
You know, Clintonian tried to build him so far that he basically became, in a policy sense, a Republican
for
practical purpose.
Unfortunately,
completely destroyed the Democratic Party in West Virginia.
He has, definitely.
So that's a challenge, right?
I know
there.
Robert Byrd would be really disappointed.
Let's take a short break here, and I want to thank you for calling in, Sean.
Sean, thank
and,
you.
Thank know, you, Sean.
It's good to hear your voice. I wish you'd come back here and have dinner with us here. We're doing dinner on Thursday nights. Tonight it was a fried chicken, birthright chicken, I guess we'll call it.
It was wonderful.
It was born right here in America.
Anyway, and but it's great to hear your voice again, and good luck with your play. That sounds great. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Bye bye.
All right, buddy.
Bye.
Take care.
Thanks, Sean.
Bye. All right, we're going to play a little tune here. Actually, I'm going to play a little Halloween thing for you guys to relate to. It'll take a couple of minutes to.
You know, it sounded just like Sean. You know, like the old days. It was just nothing's changed. Not a thing.
It's great.
He is the same.
What is that? What is that? It's great to hear him, though.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
The Dunwich Horror by H.P. Lovecraft.
Was that Diesel?
When a traveler in north central Massachusetts takes the wrong fork at the junction of the Aylesbury Pike just beyond Dean's Corners, he comes upon a lonely and curious country. The ground gets higher, and the briar-bordered stone walls press closer and closer against the ruts of the dusty, curving road. The trees of the frequent forest belts seem too large, and the wild weeds, brambles, and grasses attain a luxuriance not often found in settled regions. At the same time, the planted fields appear singularly few and barren, while the sparsely scattered houses wear a surprisingly uniform aspect of age, squalor, and dilapidation. Without knowing why, one hesitates to ask directions from the gnarled, solitary figures spied now and then on crumbling doorsteps or on the sloping, rock-strewn meadows. Those figures are so silent and furtive that one feels somehow confronted by forbidden things.
Well, I wanted to let you guys just get a little taste of the Dunwich Horror.
Thank you, Governor.
And we've been joined by Larry Bish here, and so we're going to take a little a short musical break. First, I'm going to ask Linnea to also ask what do you hope for coming after Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
What's keeping your motivation going?
You know, I think that this election is very much on my mind. I actually had a dream last night that I don't dream, that I was helping canvass for Sammy Brown, and I showed up at a house that had 20 old ladies in that house, 20 old ladies, don't ask why. And I talked to them about Sammy and told them why she was the best choice. And I had a few words about Jill Upson as well. And it was early voting. The courthouse was still open, and we all marched right down to the courthouse together to vote for Sammy Brown.
So it was not a nightmare.
It was a dream. It was amazing, and I woke up so energized.
Good dream.
And so I am very hopeful for a blue wave. I'm very hopeful for the teachers being heard and education being funded.
By the way, if nobody knew, the R&R just announced yesterday that the 65th is too close to call. And even.
All right, we're going to play a little song and take a little break here. And what I'm going to play is, what am I going to play? Oh, this is Cyndi Lauper, but it's Frank Sinatra in the background.
Oh, cool.
Very cool.
Cyndi
Lauper.
Hey there. Hi. So how are you doing, man?
Good. You? I heard you had a problem.
Yeah. You with the sad heart, don't be discouraged, don't worry, realize it's hard to take courage in a world full of people. You can lose sight of it all in the darkness, no inside you make you feel so small. But I see your truth.
Well, we're all back on the air here, by the way. Welcome back to the Name in Progress.
Name in Progress. The
program.
Name is in progress.
A confection of people, old hands at the WSHC Talk Radio, which has been exterminated. But nonetheless, anyway, it's great to have everybody back here. Not everybody, but we're gathering, you know, some old talent. Just who happened to walk into the studio.
John is taking a moment to read.
Andy Gosling, okay, from Railroad Earth has passed away. Those of you who are fans of Railroad Earth like me will find a way to protest instead of pray. I can't stand praying anymore. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I feel like I've walked into the Book of Job. That's what I feel like, okay? Wow. And God says, you know, I got a friend of mine that says, you're no good. I'm going to kill all your children and your wife, too. And Job says, oh, that's terrible. Yeah, you know, and but Job doesn't lose faith. And so, you know, 10 years later, he gets 10 more kids and another wife as a reward, all right? And William Blake has a great painting of God shining a light on the new Job with his behind him the backs of his dead children in shadow. It was one of those really wonderful things. But anyway, with that introduction,
grotesque version of the analogy of the cave.
I'm talking about Job, not Plato. What's his name, yeah. Plato. Okay, but anyway, I want to welcome Larry Bish.
Yay, Larry!
Who's been on here before? Mm-hmm. And Larry is a counselor at the prison, I believe.
It's ERJ, the Eastern Regional Jail.
Eastern Regional Jail, yeah. And he's a folk singer and a jazz musician,
true.
I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
And he even gets real gigs.
Guilty
of that, you know. He's also a vet from Vietnam era.
That's true.
Thank you for your service.
Then he is and he's a hipster, you know. I mean, I think pretty close to... And you know, if you had not been in Vietnam, you would have had to have been a hipster before Vietnam in order to be a hipster instead of a hippie, okay? But...
And not the horrible hipster definition that our generation has come up with, a real hipster, an actual cool one.
But I heard...
Okay? Are you talking Kerouac?
Yeah, but I heard, you know, none other than Allen Ginsberg say that if you were a Vietnam vet, you know, you could get a score of an extra 10 years.
You get a lot of things. I get mileage.
And they'd be grandfathered into the hipster as opposed to the freak hipster. Larry, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
This is your 10 minutes of fame.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, everybody gets it. Yeah, the Vietnam veteran Marine thing gains me ground with the conservatives because they respect that
more than I do. I know I was a stupid 17-year-old kid, did a dumb thing. I know that.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. You had trust. You had trust.
But
in
America. It impresses the opposition because that's how they are. You know, they're all.
And did you get through school on the VA?
No, I tried to go to school on the VA and failed miserably because there was nothing in my background prepared me for anything like college. I was a blue-collar kid from up north of Pittsburgh. And I failed miserably, but luckily it was a Penn State that has enough bars to support a musician.
Good.
And I went that route for a cousin road band, so I was about 40. Then switched to a single, moved out, got married, bought a house, had a kid, got divorced, moved to upstate New York. Worked the ski areas.
Were you
up
the guy there. That? Were you the cook at the Empire Diner?
No.
No, no.
I still haven't forgotten. But
I was the baker's helper at the House of Pies in Denver.
Okay.
All right, man.
I'd say you're a world traveler.
A hitchhiker. I hitchhiked across continent a couple times, across Canada.
Wow.
Up and down both coasts. I don't know how many times back when you did that. You could.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about it. You know, there was a society, there's a group of people that I wouldn't find that all unusual because I knew a lot of, all my brothers were doing the same thing. And a lot of people were doing that, but a lot more people weren't.
It's, so, as it turned out.
Yeah. So, you know.
You're trying to explain why Nixon won in 68 right there.
I have a story.
All right.
I was in 26 Marines on the Da Nang barrier when he pulled out the 26 Marines, brought him home, made a big fanfare about it. Well, I'd just gotten there, and everybody with more than 30 days to do on their tour was transferred out to other units, and people that were going home anyway were transferred back into the 26 Marines. They took that group to California and marched down the street.
Oh, man.
And this was my initiation into Richard Nixon's policies.
God.
So I got home.
You lucked out.
Yeah, that was lucky. And went door to door with big patriotic tears, telling people they should vote for George McGovern. And you know what happened.
Yes, I do.
And that sort of soured me on
it did. American me too. Politics. And me too. And as a consequence, I did not actually vote for Humphrey.
Right.
You know,
I wasn't old enough.
And well, you know, I campaigned for Bobby Kennedy in Kansas and in Nebraska.
Woo.
Because I was a student in Kansas, and in 68, Bobby came to the campus, and he was the first national anti-war or critic of the war position I had heard, and he opened my mind.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got interested in the, and then he got killed.
Yes, he did. That was the year I enlisted.
Yeah.
68, a big year.
And I don't know, something happened, you know, and I just couldn't stand the some of the opportunists that were in the Democratic Party then. Mm. Particularly some of the people that had been involved, for example, with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee 3 or 4 years earlier, and who had so manipulated the African-American leadership of that organization with stunts for publicity that ended up getting some people killed, okay? Mm-hmm. That, you know, that's one of the reasons why Stokely took over that whole organization on a nationalist kind of platform.
Carmichael.
Yeah, I mean, they were being, you know, hey, why don't you go out there and drink this water out in front of your house so I can show you got dysentery. I'll bring the docs down here.
We have proof.
Anyway, so we were protesting these kind of Democrats, right? And by the time I got to Buffalo, man, and yeah, that's where I went after Kansas. I said no, I didn't vote, but it was a calamity.
Uh-huh.
It actually was a calamity that what Nixon
did. Oh yeah, 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 and he paid for it.
So
just like hopefully this guy will pay for his. You know, we'll
so Larry, pick up where you got off there in California with the Marines. In 68?
Oh, and I was in Pennsylvania. I joined the Marines in 68. That was the big Tet offensive. I was 17. And I went in with my kid brother. He was 16. And that's the sort of stuff that was going on. We went to San Diego. I was a field radio operator.
Coronado?
USMC San Diego's a boot camp.
Okay.
For the West Coast. We went to Paris Island, you know.
Great place.
Yeah, it was fun.
I've been there, too.
Sandbox. And, we went to radio school there, and the top five guys in our class would be going to Lejeune in North Carolina. Everyone else was going to Nam because radio operators were dropping like flies.
That's right.
Number one.
No guns.
Only identifiable.
Oh, no, we had guns.
Only identifiable officer in the field.
That's right. You're standing next to the officer, and you're the communication. So it made you a first target or second target. Mm. The only other one was a worse position would be the machine gunner.
And that's before
flak. He was popular.
No flak jackets back then. Really?
Had them, but you didn't really want to wear them.
Too heavy.
Well, if you got hit in the chest and the zipper was up, you couldn't take it off.
Then you burned.
We had a lot of things like that going. We were the first... Well, my brother mainly, but we were the first group that used the M16. Up to that point, they used the M14. So we had a new rifle that had problems. They had a time with that. I hadn't thought about that in a long time.
It jammed or something? Or
yeah, it would jam. Okay. But they fixed it.
After.
We can't keep having it. That was also when the war turned into a war of attrition. And... there were a lot of things about Vietnam that we don't want to let go. You want to remember this kind of
thing. And you don't want to repeat it.
Right, and that's why.
Well,
Well, anyway, the rest of the story is my kid brother went to Vietnam, and I went to Lejeune because I was one of the top students. And I was there for a while, and it became apparent he volunteered for a line company because that's the way he is. And... he wasn't coming home. So I signed a waiver because of the Sullivan Act. You couldn't have two brothers in a combat zone at the same time because six or eight Sullivan, they went down on a ship in World War II and wiped out the family name.
Right. Exactly.
So I signed a waiver thinking, I am not going to volunteer for a line company. I'm smarter than he is. Well, I got there and he wouldn't leave. He wouldn't leave me there. You know? So I finally talked him into it after I was a Battalion 1-4. I was in charge of keeping the aircraft out of the path of artillery. That was my job. So I was communicating with a lot of pilots and stuff. And my brother was dropped in on they did a thing called... Do you want to hear this?
Yes, I do. These are great stories.
Okay. There was a genius at Penn State who discovered in a wind tunnel that you can't hear a helicopter at treetop level until it's immediately over you. So it can approach and you won't hear it.
Like an electric car.
Didn't Stephen Stills sing?
Hey, I just bought one.
Didn't Stephen Stills?
Me too.
Did you?
I've had one for a long
time. Didn't Stephen Stills sing a song about this? Treetop flyer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
And they were called Kingfisher operations. So what would happen is... we'd get an intel and get on a CH-46, drop right in on them. We'd wait till they were taking a break, and then we'd drop in on them, right on top of them, and come out shooting, and they killed a lot of people like that. It worked real well. And it didn't take them long to figure it out. And so my brother's on a Kingfisher operation, I'm doing the air, and they set up a bogus target, a phony break, and they're stacking arms and laying around. But they had tunneled away into the Da Nang barrier, which is our own minefield. And so we dropped in on them into the middle of our own minefield, and they knew how to get out. So they just skedaddled and then opened up an ambush. So that was the stupid little Vietnamese, you know.
Well, we need to save some stories for a future show.
Boy, unbelievable.
Because they're too good.
Well, the whole point of this story is that after that, my brother decided to go to Okinawa and got him out of there.
Well, that's good. So he saved his life, maybe.
Yeah, he owes me one.
He owes you one. Still, you're still reminding him of that, okay?
Yeah.
So, Larry, I mean, here we are. Another what? It's 5 days until the election.
It's way short. It's a short timer.
Five days.
Yeah,
5 days. And what happens? First of all, I want your prediction.
I don't think it's going to be as good as I want it to be. I think I can't understand how, especially suburban women, can support this guy.
Yeah.
I can't understand overlooking what I'm seeing and hearing this guy do.
May I just give Larry a little dosage of hope?
Yes.
One of the things, I'm very pessimistic. Naturally, and my younger brother's worse. My younger, these Democrats suck, man. They gotta get their asses out. This is bullshit. Blah blah blah. And I'm like, dude, calm down. But my oldest brother, who has so far stage 4 colon and liver. Amazingly, he's out of his group. There was 15 in his group. He's the only one that's still alive. He's had 3 major surgeries, 2 of which he coded. He has not been wrong. He predicted Trump.
Oh, I did too.
Yeah, he predicted it. He has not been wrong. He lives in Virginia. He's never been wrong about an election. And he actually believes the media is skating this close to the vest and showing you the numbers because they want you to watch. He thinks this is actually going to be a tsunami.
Okay.
He thinks
a blue tsunami.
He thinks they're going to get out of. I think there's 12 governor seats. He thinks 10 of them are going to go blue.
Good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. My skepticism comes from where I was raised in northwestern Pennsylvania, and I know these people. I grew up with them. They were all around me. You know, that was the male model that I had to break away from, which I had a lot of trouble doing once I got in the military and got around some minorities. I understood my family, and I left home early and worked in a steel mill when I was 15, and so I was around these guys a lot. These people, I know them very well. That they want Rush Limbaugh to be president, and
ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen.
Are you going to talk about one of your suppositories again?
I would like for you to purchase my Rush to Excellence suppositories for people in broadcasting in excess of 300 pounds, ladies and gentlemen.
That'll make them rush to the bathroom.
Thank you, Rush, for that. Okay.
Of course you're welcome, but you're not.
Anyway, so these steel workers that got misled. Yeah, go.
Well, have you ever read Thomas Frank's books?
Oh, yeah. What's Wrong with Kansas?
Exactly. Hey, what's wrong, liberal? Listen up, liberal.
It went downhill from when I graduated from college there.
I saw you mentioned that, Kansas.
KU, you know? Sure.
Yeah. But he makes some interesting points about Democrats.
I didn't know John was a Jayhawk.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Man, you like basketball too, John?
I went to a lot of basketball games.
Oh, man.
And
you've seen the best.
Do I like it? I don't know. I didn't like. No. My girlfriend wanted to go.
That's a good reason to go.
Okay.
That's a good reason to go. So Linnea from before. Have you met Linnea previous?
No.
I don't believe so. No.
Yeah, Linnea is the local rep for AFT and led the teachers here in the Panhandle.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
But you told teachers. Did you say you teach elementary?
Yes.
Okay.
Those are the formidable years.
Were you trained specially for that? I mean, was that what you wanted to teach, or is that just how the deck got dealt?
Okay, so the truth is, I went to Rutgers University and I studied ancient Mediterranean civilizations with a double major, so ancient Mediterranean civilizations, anthropology, and minor in archaeology.
Oh, well, that leads directly to first graders.
That's some big money there, right?
Wow, that's a lot of history there.
Yeah.
A lot happened.
So 9/11 happened right before I was graduating from college, and there are no jobs.
It's tough.
And everybody's going back to graduate school, so you're not getting into graduate school. The New York City teaching fellows came to my campus and had an event, and I went and I applied, and I became a special education teacher in 2002.
Oh, my gosh. Right. Wow.
And so this is my 17th year in the classroom.
Man.
Oh, wow.
And every day I'm hoping it won't be my last.
Oh.
You can do 20. You're looking at 20, easy.
I don't know.
After you do 20, then you do 25. You'll be all right.
The average special education teacher lasts 4 years.
Now this is this has to do with the stresses of dealing with kids that are in stressful situations, right? Okay. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Okay.
Well, we're seeing
for
a lot
all those
more
parents out there with the less than perfect child.
Less than perfect child. Yeah. Well, we all have them. Even mine are less than perfect. Although
you see some characteristics of your pupils in the current president.
Oh yeah.
The way he.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
That's an aside.
Well, I mean, in Jefferson County, we are not immune to the opioid crisis. We have a lot of kids who have various traumas. A lot of kids whose parents are doing drugs or did drugs while they were pregnant with their kids. And these kids are coming into school and we need to educate them and reach them and fulfill their needs, and it's becoming quite a struggle, and it's stressful for a teacher to have to teach these kids and be a parent to these kids and love these kids. Like, I had one today who was in a major crisis, and we ended up sending her home, but It was a rough morning because this child is needing so much, and we're just not able to fulfill her needs.
Right, and that's tough. That's very tough. Do you have enough victories to make it feel like you're making forward progress, or is that a complicated question?
Oh, that's so complicated. Well, just today with the child that I sent home, as we're waiting for dad to come pick this child up, the school nurse came out and said that she had talked to another parent of one of my kids and told me that the mom said that this is also a very difficult parent, by the way, that she's very grateful for me and that her child wants to come to school now because of me. And I won't lie, that's the one and only thing that kept me at work today.
That's good that happened.
Well, you know, my youngest brother taught special ed for a long time. And, he's on disability now, depression.
Cheers, everybody.
I think Larry, you're also a counselor in the prison, right? For a lot of opioid situations that are there, right?
I'd say 3/4 of the inmates are addicts.
3/4,
probably.
That's really huge. Yeah, I have not heard that.
The number of real criminals go out there.
Well, here we are talking about opioids.
Mostly non-violent drug offenders, or in because of a crime related to their addiction, and you know
they were stealing.
Right, exactly. Breaking in or stuff like that.
Yeah,
but I just started a pilot program, and I've been after it for months. I finally got approval, as a matter of fact, support from Central in Charleston for this. And I see things happening. I see a lot more paroles being granted. I see a lot more, a bigger and bigger part of my job is to help these guys get into, these people, these women and men, get into rehabs. And I have mixed feelings about a lot of the rehabs. There's a lot of faith-based rehabs that don't follow a lot of. You wonder what they're on.
Just straighten up and be like, just talk to Jesus.
You said,
Larry, have you thought about prayer?
Yeah, I coach these guys and counsel them, and I say, here's your Bible. Pray your way out of here. Go ahead.
What about this program that Senator Unger has brought out recently about the coaching?
The recovery coach. I went through the training with Senator Unger, as a matter of fact, over at Blue Ridge, and I'm qualified to do that. But we're working with the people who have that credential, and they're amazing. They're all recovering addicts, and they're amazing.
Is this the program James Boyd is associated with a little bit?
Yes. Yeah. And I would like to say there's a woman named Stephanie Stout, who's and another woman named Deborah Gray, who's with another group called Sober Services. There's just a growing activist kind of thing, and the courts are still
mixed, you know, because, you know, I hear about sense and dirty words pour out of my mouth, you know, sometimes these judges. But more and more, they're becoming aware of what they're dealing with. You know, this isn't criminal. Right. There's a book I buy and pass out called Chasing the Scream, about the history of the drug wars. And how a guy named Harry Anslinger was head of the FBI.
Oh, yeah. I remember that name.
Yeah. And, you know, so this program, though, I'm really excited about this program. I'm having great success with it. I was teaching six classes, and they would get 5 days off their sentence at the complete class, and they paid $25 right. for it. And it was parenting, anger management, addiction kind of. Stress and another one.
Is that something the whole country is going to need soon?
I amalgamated those classes, and now I have one.
What the hell you say?
One class. It's called Stress, Anger Management, Critical Thinking, and I have as a huge component of it mindfulness meditation.
I'm ready for that.
And I'm just really excited about how that's working.
Is there any way to do that on the radio?
Mindfulness meditation.
I mean, it's like, you know, I often talk to the Quakers. I haven't tried to talk to the Quakers to try to get them to come on the radio, but, you know, the Quaker essence is silence.
So, right. I mean, that's right. You don't talk unless you have a feeling.
That
know?
Makes it rough.
It was tough to do it. I don't know.
Yeah. That would be hard. Yeah. That would be tough.
But radio mindfulness, I'm wondering if there's a little slot in which we might be able to.
There's a guy named that. I'm having trouble.
Howard's this is a senior center.
yeah, the memory has taken on a different way of working.
If we told you everything we remembered, you know, you'd shoot yourself in the head.
There's a young lady here who would disagree with the senior center. The rest of us.
Well, she knows.
I am the youngest one.
She knows who we're talking about.
I use the excuse that it has to go through a whole lot more information to get to the word I'm looking for.
The search engine has to do a lot more filtering.
It does. Yeah. Absolutely. It's got a lot more networks to travel. But this is working very well. I'm really good. They're coming up to observe it next week. And
from Charleston?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's great.
And, is the governor coming?
I hope not.
You gotta hit,
he's playing golf. He's got a golf game. We don't be playing with Trump.
You got to bring a special Johnny on the spot for him.
Well, maybe it would be good because I stipulate that if you're going to come and observe, you have to participate. So they're going to experience a guided meditation.
All right, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to do that too. Yeah. That sounds awesome.
Okay, now we're getting down to where we're going to wind this up, you know. But JB,
yes, sir.
On the subject of mindful meditation, you're the first person that came to mind.
Uh oh,
I have done it.
You were, and I want to know why you are really responding to Larry's hook on this right now.
I think Larry learned about meditation at the same place that I learned about it in California on Route 1 in Big Sur.
Exit 37. Yeah.
No, Esalen Institute. You ever heard of it?
Epsilon, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my.
Yeah.
It goes back to the 50s.
Wow. Don't they make tacos now?
No, they grow their own food.
Oh, you guys, you don't
totally
know
anything.
I got to California in 72 to live permanently, and I hunted down those guys, Esalen, right. And they were no longer there.
Awesome.
The same people that were doing it were offering primal scream therapy.
No.
It's going
scream
really well.
Scream therapy?
Any of us can go out there. They have a full curriculum.
Their deal was psychedelics.
Well, yeah, but that was before. Yeah, that's what they were born on, but now they're just completely diverse.
Who's the writer about plants? He's got a new book. I read it.
Amory Levins.
Michael.
The guy that did The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Amory Levins is another one.
I think so, but he did one on How to Change Your Mind. Highly recommend it. And it's all about psychedelics and the medicinal
right.
things
that's starting
that are
going
to gain. On. They're using it for schizophrenia.
Right.
They're using it for cancer patients. Yeah, yeah. That takes away the fear of death. Right. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's cutting edge.
Linnea.
Yeah.
Linnea. Yes, John.
Do you think that men need to take LSD in order to be able to do more than one thing at a time?
What a question. That's a tough one.
Keep in mind, he's just asking for a friend.
Of course.
And you don't have to answer for yourself.
Yeah. LSD to do more than one thing at a time.
You probably know somebody that could answer that.
All the women in my family say that I can't seem to go in the... I can't get off the single direction. I mean, I'm wondering whether that was.
I think John's trying to tell us something here, don't you think? he's hankering.
Wait, let us.
I want to let her speak.
But I wish I could remember that guy's name.
Oh.
Maybe we should do that on election night.
You know, that might be a great experiment, John. We should try it.
Election night, we should do it.
Hey, science says experiment.
Science. Exactly. It's science.
We'll meet at Democratic headquarters on Queen Street.
I will be there. I will be there before 7.
Don't touch the orange punch. You know?
Please don't forget to email me.
What about Jefferson?
No. I'm on the executive county of Berkeley County.
You can do Berkeley, but look, let's figure out a mutual location between the two so we can meet and do our thing.
There used to have a person at the party that was going to have a
caller
or something like that.
This show is so good, somebody's calling in.
Woo-hoo! Caller.
If it's Captain somebody, hang up.
welcome to the program. Who's calling, please?
Yeah, it's me again.
Mr. Bill.
Hound dog.
Right on, brother.
Yeah.
What's up, man?
I got the entree for next week.
Ooh.
What's that?
Mushrooms and steak.
Mushrooms and steak?
Ooh.
Is that
Ooh. Mushrooms and steak.
I'm on my way, Bill. I'll see you in a few minutes.
Yeah. Okay, man. That's right.
Steak, yes.
That's right.
Hey,
okay.
I got my ears on over here. I hear all of you.
What do
all
you right, think? Okay. What do you think, man?
What do you think? He told you what he thinks.
Good job, all of you. Everybody gets an A.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right,
thank
man.
You, Bill.
Thanks, appreciate Bill, man. Bill.
My brain later, did it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, buddy. Michael Palin. Palin.
Right.
Michael Palin.
He is awesome. Yeah. That guy knows about it.
He knows some seeds, man.
How to change your mind. Change Highly mind. Recommend.
Yeah. He inspired the cook at the press room.
He's I don't a doubt
big
it.
Michael Pollan yeah. fan. That's and, what he grows
he,
his own
he
garden.
He wasn't a druggie. He decided to investigate this, and he's a great researcher, and he took all these drugs and wrote about them. It's amazing.
Well, tune in.
And drop out.
But don't drop out just yet.
No, we can't drop out. We have to participate. This is a participatory democracy, even though we know who's in charge.
I have a question. Do you think our democracy is in peril? Yeah.
I say yes.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Larry, let me just break this down for you, okay?
Oh, here we go.
Okay. Our democracy is in great peril. I'm telling you right now, get your ass out there and vote. That's what I'm telling you.
Thank you,
vote.
Bernie. Thank you, Bernie.
Jerry, have you been to Jerry? Mike? No.
Larry?
No.
What's his name? What's
Bernie,
his name?
Bernie.
Larry, Bernie.
Bernie, have you been to Ben and Jerry's lately? That's what I was trying to say.
I was just there.
Okay. What did you have?
Resist ice cream.
I had none of your business is what I had.
No. That's one of their best flavors.
I had the resist.
I had the resist.
All right.
What the hell am I supposed to say? It's not on the script.
I think let me comment on that, okay? Because I believe that it's a complicated question. Democracy requires security, and it requires a certain sense of values that we agree on.
Mm-hmm.
How many? I'm not sure, but some.
More than one.
And I fear that when there's not that, then. You know, democracy starts to fail because you end up getting stuck in the mud and you can't move anywhere, even though necessity moves on. And that happened in the Revolution, that happened in the Civil War, and I feel like I'm walking into the Dunwich Horror, man. That's what I'm feeling.
What about the worldwide aspect of it? It's everywhere. It's not just here.
Right. I mean, there's this, John, you and I have talked about. Look at what's going on in Brazil. Right. It's nuts. There's all these strong men rising up across the world that are oppressing their people keeping a stranglehold on it by massive multinational corporatism.
Of course,
it's crazy. And it really is. Instead of
fascism being disguised or just generality as a rise and a alternative and a this is corporatism meets fascism right in your face.
Yes.
And that's what frightens me, and I agree with John. John, I tell you right now, man, if you're not paying attention to Steve Schmidt, the former Republican, I'm telling you right now, you guys sound I mean, Steve is a, I would disagree with him on a lot of things like the budget and taxes and such, but I'm telling you right now, there's a lot of things socially. This guy is dead on. I mean, he really, really is, and he's afraid. When a guy like Steve Schmidt and Malcolm Nance, a guy who's a career intelligence officer, has written two books, very successful books, is sounding the alarm bells of fascism, you better get your ass out there and vote.
Okay, Mike, that's going to be your last
I think that's a good sentence. One.
What's your last...
It was a good one.
Last two sentences here, JB. We're getting near the end of the
tape. If I was listening to Mike, I would definitely go out and vote. And I'm just thankful to have John and Linnea and Larry and Mike here. I mean, I think we had a great show tonight. And,
it was a lot of fun.
I hope we can do it again.
I learned a lot.
And it's great having Sean call in.
Larry, last two sentences.
I want to give kudos to African-American women and what they're doing and have always been doing, but they're doing it in spades now. And I want to encourage everyone to talk to young people. They're our hope. If they don't get excited about this, we may well have a problem, a real problem on our hands, and it might be time to go to Canada or something. You know?
Costa Rica. Costa Rica is what I'm
like. I like Costa Rica.
A little bit warmer.
Spanish.
All right, Linnea, last word, Linnea.
It's my turn to talk.
Yeah. Sure. Go ahead.
Just get out to vote and... you know, I haven't said this publicly. Thank you for your support of the teachers in February and March. We appreciate it.
No, okay. Well, thank you. I think your fate is our fate, I believe, you know, frankly.
I think very true.
Okay. Oh, can I put a plug in for the Labor Council?
Yes, please do.
Okay, Kenny Collinson, our president, has announced that all labor supporters meet at Democratic headquarters on Queen Street Saturday morning at 9:30.
Oh, yeah.
And we're all going to split up and take a list, and we're going to hit our labor members.
Labor to neighbor.
Labor to neighbor, and we're going to encourage them to vote. So, and we're doing sine waves and everything else. If you want to help out, just call into Democratic headquarters on Queen Street, right downtown Martinsburg. And where's the one in Jefferson?
It's on Washington Street.
Washington Street?
Yeah, I don't know exactly where, but it's on Washington Street.
Okay.
All right. Okay, everybody. Well, by the time we meet again here in a week from now, we're going to be eating some steak here. Right. Steak and mushrooms, as Mr. Bill has said.
He told me that was it. He told me that was my last sentence. You know, he told me that was all I could say.
He can't say anymore.
I object.
We're all
object.
Done. We're gonna
cut off.
We got to bring it to an end. My editing job will be too much. All right. Anyway, thank you guys for tuning in to the Name in Progress show, okay, on enlightenedradio.org.
This name is in progress.
All right, man. Mike Diesel, JB Christensen, Lynn Atkinson, and me, John Kays, and we'll be back in a week if we don't die in between then. All right, see you later.